I didn't feel the rumble.
I'm sorry.
I went around the room.
Want to make sure we can actually hear as little of the actual film sound as possible. Hello. Welcome. Yahoo's with my phone. I'm Brad.
Yeah, the microphone. Ryan Haynes.
Okay, Bob. We are here to talk about Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
Time to happen sooner or later.
Yep. The year I was born was the year this movie came out, which shows you how old I am.
I was born.
77?
Yeah. 77.
Man, you are old.
I'm yeah, I really am. But anyway, so let's get going. We got the prerequisite John Williams theme. You know, that's what we could do for Dave. Anytime they whistle some of the music, he can't speak for a minute.
Yeah.
We've
come up with a rule that, like, if anyone quotes the line, they can't speak for 60 seconds.
So don't be surprised if you hear as little Ron as possible during this movie.
You know,
go ahead.
When I initially started watching Star Wars, like, as a kid, none of this made any sense to me at all.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know.
You know, I read it. Most of the time I didn't even read it, you know. But even when I did read it, I didn't exactly know exactly what was happening. But now, just even in context of the prequels, you know, that actually did clear things up.
Yeah.
You know, that actually kind of does make sense. You know, it actually does kind of come full circle, kind of sort of, you know.
And a couple of changes from the original version of this movie is that they didn't have the subtitles, I believe, of a new one.
The
chapter. But they did have the crawl. So the 1980 re-release did have both of those things, but the original release didn't. So
there's the
famous pan, the blockade runner, which we later see in Episode 3, and the Star Destroyer. First glimpse of that. Shot very well parodied by Spaceballs. Feel free to chime in here anytime you want, guys. I mean,
I'm watching the movie.
I enjoy watching the movie too, but we're supposed to be talking about it.
Well, look at those
uniforms. Wow. I mean, it's very much, I know, if you look at a lot of this stuff, it's very much 70s. Look, as far as, like, the rubber...
I don't think that when I watched it.
But, I mean, you can...
I kind of see in the haircuts, but that's it. I don't quite see it in the uniforms.
So, for me, I just see it, like, in the whole fake computer parts and the computer buttons.
Yeah.
You know, that
stuff does not throw me that at all. Like,
no, it doesn't throw me at all.
I think this is just... I don't think 70s. I think, you know, just...
I'm thinking 70s.
But,
like, no, I mean, but it's funny, when I watch Brad the Con, I think 80s.
Yeah.
I don't think 70s when I watch, you know. Mm-hmm. I guess we have to address the whole controversy of the special edition versus the original version.
Yeah, but there aren't really any major changes that...
Right
now.
Well, I mean,
well,
not,
I mean
right here.
Not right here. I mean,
New Hope has the most changes, I think.
The engines that we just saw for the Star Destroyer, did those redone?
I don't think so.
They look redone.
I can more or less point out where a new shot is versus where
older
shot. I more or less can do that. I think just about anyone.
I mean, I think it was more that the picture was restored from what we were used to than anything. But,
I think the best this movie's ever going to look right here.
Oh, yeah.
But, the fact of the matter is that the original version's just better.
Yeah.
In a lot, in, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the changes when they come. I mean, there are probably some coming up in
the it's just one or two, it's two or three changes that are just make such a difference, like, in quality-wise. Like, I mean, I'm just thrown completely out of the movie when, you know, I think we all know which scenes in particular every fanboy out of the movie completely.
I suppose. We'll talk about that later. I wanted to mention David Prowse. First time we've mentioned him in one of the commentaries, I believe.
Well, he was never involved. We've only done the prequel trilogy, yeah. And he wasn't involved in that.
David Prowse is
Scene where you can almost see R2 just run into that little pillar right there. Hmm. Like, I've watched this one too many times, but like the part where like R2 puts his third foot down and like he starts to like come towards 3PO and like he almost runs into a pillar. I wanted to acknowledge how great the editing is.
Oh, the editing is the
editing is phenomenal. Get into the
Paul Hirsch and Richard Chu
and Marsha Lucas,
right?
But I thought the editing was so, and like I didn't really realize how good the editing was until after that Empire of Dreams documentary.
Yeah,
where they talk about how very little they actually had to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And like how they just use that, you know, and thrive on it.
Yeah.
You know, they thrive on their limitations, which is, you know, what some of the best movies, you know, mm-hmm. are product. So
I'm hoping for the same thing on my movie, but anyway, that's for a different commentary. Princess Leia Organa,
Introduction of a Theme by John Williams,
Carrie Fisher.
Notice how I'm like withholding my urge to like quote.
I appreciate it. We don't want this turning into another Back to the Future.
The master's real warfare.
No. Neither her nor Natalie Portman ever came, you know, struck me like that. I mean, I just Natalie Portman in particular, like you could tell, like she was not. A lot of the time, she was not happy to be involved in those movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could. It's unfortunate, but you could tell.
Yeah.
Well, I think the prequel overall, you know, yeah. I think they had a little bit less control to do kind of their own thing. You know, I could always add to it and add their own thing into it. You know, I think they had more room to do that here since it was just the beginning and things just started.
It finally came together in episode 3, I think.
Yeah.
It finally came together in episode 3. And like,
oh, I mean, they were just really working with such inferior scripts when it came to. The first two, certainly.
Looking at episode 3 now, I can see the tone and the kind of movie they were trying to make in 1 and 2. You know what I'm saying? That's how I see it. Looking at episode 3, you're like, I see what kind of movies George Lucas is trying to make with episode 1 and 2. He didn't accomplish that, obviously.
Yeah.
It's like when I watched Spider-Man 2 versus Spider-Man 1. I'm like, oh, I can see what kind of movie Sam Raimi was trying to make with Spider-Man 1.
Yeah.
Which he achieved, you know, brilliantly with Spider-Man 2. But that's another movie.
You have some legitimate complaints about Spider-Man. I'll admit that.
But do you not see the point I'm trying to make?
I do.
With the prequels and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's like these short introductions in the beginning of Vader, they just have a shock.
Yeah.
In the conversation, you know, you really get the idea that not only is he a powerful guy, but he's really hardcore, he knows exactly what he wants, and he's here through anybody to get it.
Exactly.
And we get that full on just with these short introductions, and that stays, even though we shift back over to, you know, Tatooine and all the things that happen down there.
Yeah.
We still know that and he's carried a hardcore through, guy.
It's carried through Empire, and he's kind of softened in Jedi, but that's like,
right.
That's another conversation for another time.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we should bring up at least Empire and then Jedi at some point because, I don't know if we were necessarily.
I'd like to avoid bringing up Empire and Jedi until we actually talk about watching Empire and Jedi.
But, so are we talking about doing all 6 now? Or?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We have to.
All right.
And we've done that. We did the prequel trilogy. For some reason, I mean, was it ever like a conscious decision to do the prequel trilogy first? I mean, it's just like how it happened. And now we're
fine. It made sense to me to do the prequel trilogy.
I guess, yeah, but.
First, the only one that didn't make sense to me was doing episode 2 before episode 1.
Yeah.
Looking at you.
Who's crazy idea was that?
That was
a crazy.
I'm surprised you're not bringing up, what's that definitely? Hidden Fortress.
Oh, Hidden Fortress. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you always bring up. And we just have like sort of a hark back to that scene at the beginning.
Yeah.
As they're walking along the
sand. No, you're absolutely right. Thank you. Man, I almost forgot about that.
Well done, sir.
Well done. Well played. Wow, we made Kevin Smith reference to Star Wars commentary. Imagine that. But, no, I mean, we should bring up, thank you, Dave, for reminding me that Lucas acknowledges the influence of Akira Kurosawa's samurai film Hidden Fortress on, in particular, the Star Wars movies and especially the characters of C-3PO and R2-D2, which I really saw the first time I saw Hidden Fortress a couple of years ago. It's like, oh my god. I mean, this can be more obvious. This part of music here, actually, by John Williams, I think you'll agree with me, Dave, is very reminiscent of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, which I've heard of this Stravinsky comparison on more than one occasion.
Yeah,
when it comes to John Williams.
You can do several.
Oh yeah, the sequence of Fantasia with the dinosaurs and
And
I do see the similarity.
Now, okay, was this like skeleton?
No, it was in the version.
It was in the original.
Because I watched the original version recently, and
I couldn't remember. I thought it was in the original version, but I couldn't remember.
That's a shot that was visually enhanced.
But I remember watching the special edition in the theater.
I thought the exact same thing.
And it was the first time I had ever seen the movie in widescreen. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen it in theaters, or didn't remember seeing it in theaters, and you know, we never had widescreen videos.
Well, you're like very years old.
But, and it's like, I remember when I first watched this, it was absolutely amazing. You see so much more detail than you're ever used to before seeing in widescreen for the first time. It really, you know, made me realize that it's like widescreen is obviously the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like watching 2001 the first time on the big screen. I mean, it just completely... I saw things in that movie that I'd never seen before. And it's like... It's always a funny moment.
One of the few classic sounds.
Yeah. Ben Burtt, sound designer. Sound designer extraordinaire. Basically, took over the sound in the prequel trilogy, and you didn't really hear too much about Gary Rice from working on these movies on the prequels as much as you were used to.
Ben Burtt now working for Pixar.
Yeah, he's doing the voice of Wally.
Which Wally's going to be very little dialogue in here in Wally, which kind of. And, like, in the fact that Ben Burtt's doing that, that's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, he brought R2-D2 to life, so, like, this is going to be real, I think it's going to be a really interesting movie.
Yeah. And we should say Kane Baker.
He made R2-D2, like, a complete character without giving him any dialogue.
Yeah. And we should mention Kane Baker's R2-D2, and
Anthony Daniels.
C-3PO. The stuff he says in that Empire of Dreams, Anthony Daniels, is some of the stuff he has to say in that documentary is just really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love...
Have you ever seen a documentary?
I don't know about
you. You haven't. Yeah, I mean, you know exactly what we're talking about. It's like,
it's like a 2.5-hour documentary.
Okay, I have no idea.
But, you know, the ultimate deluxe box set, I guess.
I mean, was it really that ultimate? I mean, we didn't get the...
I mean, going back to the whole controversy of the original version versus the 97 and then 2000. When did the 2004 version? Because for the DVD.
Yeah.
As well, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you never stop tweaking with these movies, which I find, you know,
annoying to no end.
As a kid, this part was always really scary and chaotic. But, you know,
I can see that. I mean, you know, it's very low light, very dark atmosphere to it. You got a bunch of time. You're not sure what's going on. So, yeah, I mean, I can completely see that. I mean, I really don't remember my first time watching this. The first Star Wars movie I really vividly remember watching was Return of the Jedi.
Yeah,
I think mainly because of the fact that so much went wrong that first opening day. It wasn't even funny. A lot of changes here.
What are these guys called? These doobags. That's right. Like, this is one of the few shots that I'm not that bothered by.
No.
This is one of the few additions that
not in the least. It's really well done.
It makes sense story-wise.
Yeah.
As well. I think it's a cool little addition.
Yeah.
Oh. Anyway.
Gosh.
I'm going to destroy myself.
Is this
a big miniature? Is it like a really big miniature?
I think so. I mean,
it can't be anything else.
Yeah.
There's a big, what are those things called?
Oh, I can't remember what the Jawa's transport is.
Yeah.
I had it, I know that.
Oh, you had the, okay.
I had the toy, I don't remember what it was called, though.
These sets are amazing. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm...
Oh, who did the production design on this?
The guy who did Superman. Very known.
I'm trying to give him credit, and I can't remember.
He did this, and then he did Superman the movie. He designed the Fortress of Solitude and all that stuff, and all the stuff on
Krypton.
Krypton! Thank you.
One of your favorite movies of all time? Remember?
Well, you know,
this is interesting.
Okay, I have something to say to you later on, Brian. That, like, Gabe, go ahead and I had a point to make, but I'm sure it'll be made at some point. But go ahead, Gabe.
Okay.
Thank you, Ron.
No.
And, I was going to say it was interesting how they decided to present, or I guess how movies decided to present the relationship between 3PO and R2-D2. He immediately kind of starts off with them fighting and separating, you know.
Yeah.
But then kind of coming back together, just randomly coming back together. And so that kind of just establishes that, you know, they're kind of always meant to be together. And all
together.
Yeah, I just thought that was an interesting way to establish that by beginning to the same of the fight.
And
we kind of knew because of the fight that they had had a history, even though it was a show,
that
kind of just bringing them back together.
The only, really, the only two characters that exist in their, you know, true form throughout the entire series.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Anakin / Darth Vader does as well, but, you know.
The head turn always makes you laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys shine up.
I like that he says shutting up, sir.
Did he say?
Yeah.
It's very
subtle.
When did he say that?
When he's saying the tail end of, when Uncle Owen is saying the tail end of his line, he says, shutting up, sir.
That's hilarious.
I'm sure you're going to go home
tonight. I am.
You go rewind.
I think it's in the original version of the movie.
Doesn't Mark Hamill call Carrie by her first name, by her actual name in some version?
Yes. Yes, and I'm trying to remember where it is.
Exactly. No, it's like towards the end.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. When he, like, gets back from blowing up the Death Star. We're not giving away anything here, are we? I mean, I'm assuming people listening to this poor deluded souls as they are.
All four of them.
I've actually seen these movies. Although I did meet somebody who, when they screened Episode 3, that was the first Star Wars movie they'd ever seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I knew a guy. I used to work with him a couple of years ago. He came from Russia, and he had never even really heard of Star Wars.
Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, obviously.
Who's later on go on with a brilliant voiceover career, wouldn't you say, Dave?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm glad he kind of found his footing or something. I think they're technically live, but as a voice actor, if you said it's a third job doing, you know, the Joker, obviously, but also a couple of others.
He does something on Avatar, doesn't he, Dave?
Yeah, he does probably a little bit on Avatar. He's just, you know, the best voice actor on that show is probably the guy that played Iroh. I don't know if anybody knows
who
that.
Who played who?
Iroh. He's another character in that show. He's a guy named Mako, which you may know him as a famous Japanese.
The name sounds familiar.
No, he did Splinter in the TMNT.
Did it?
Mako?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
He just recently passed away. And actually, I think George Baldwin is now playing the part of Iroh. He's doing a good enough job, but not quite doing Mako. Coming
off the subject.
Sorry. But anyway, Mark Hamill. Kind of took over as the best voice actor on that show. So his voice acting chops have just always been just amazing. He's also done a couple of video games too.
But Wing Commander. I was gonna say.
But by the way, it's ironic that Ron is chastising Dave for going off the subject because he's usually guilty of it.
I'm sure. I mean, it's already happened. already.
But
yeah, Mark Hamill, fantastic voice actor.
Yeah.
But it's a shame that he's too old to be the Joker now, but I would love to see it.
Well, wasn't that, isn't he about the age that Jack Nicholson was when he did the Joker?
But see, the whole point of it is here's another tangent that can be going on.
Yeah.
Is they want the Joker to be about the same age as Batman.
Okay.
But from what I've heard about that Dark Knight thing, I mean, Heath Ledger just is going to be nailing it.
Yes.
Hey, look, it's a movie.
Yes, I know.
Hey,
okay. Very famous scene, and we're completely talking about something completely different. But, you know.
I have my favorite 3PO line is coming up. You can carry the one that said you'll bust the other.
Okay, 60 seconds now.
Hey, they didn't get in trouble when you caught a line.
Did you pull one?
Yes, he did.
It's rare when he does it. Personally, so that's probably why.
Actually, acknowledge my favorite line tonight. We're all gonna do it.
I think it's interesting here. We're hearing about Antilles and a couple of other people, and it's another time.
Yeah.
That finally gets referenced for real. You know, with the people.
Yeah.
You kind of never really knew as a kid going on and saying the game.
Well, that's the amazing part about this movie. I mean, Lucas just so completely nailed this story from the start. And I mean, you know, it's where even if you didn't completely understand it, you followed it because of the fact that it was so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
it was a completely human story too.
Yeah, I mean that's part of the reason why this is still for me the best Star Wars movie. I love Empire to death, but you know.
So do you think that R2 basically got him to remove his little thing? That's basically the only reason.
Yeah.
He's just kind of tricking him into removing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't like the item.
Not quite there yet.
No, I don't like the item.
Yeah, I think.
Who are these two actors?
I wish I knew.
I'm blowing in that room.
Yep.
I like the actors who got to play the younger versions of these.
Yeah. They got people really, you know, you could convincingly see aging into these actors.
Yep.
So.
I wonder what happened to Cleve Lars. I wonder how he died. North League, Lars is like, Lars, Dad, Flo,
anyone? I don't know what happened to him.
What do you think happened to him, dude? I think he got killed by sand people. Maybe like, seriously, like, remember he lost his leg fighting the sand people?
Right.
And then I think he went out to avenge Smee's death, and I think he got killed.
So he rose up.
Thank you.
Wow, that's right. He was in episode 2. I forgot about that. I'm sorry. Clearly, I try to repress as much of episode 2 as possible.
Well, there were a lot of
There are some really good ones.
There are some great story points in episode three. I mean, like the Jango Fett subplot, all the stuff that happens on
episode three. I wouldn't necessarily.
I like the Jango Fett subplot.
It doesn't go anywhere.
It completely goes somewhere.
What do you mean? Boba Fett isn't even in episode three.
But I'm just saying, like, that's all you need to see of Boba Fett in the prequel trilogy. Because I love the Jango Fett subplot, and I love the stuff on Tatooine on episode two. Love story.
No, okay. Forget the Tatooine stuff is great. The Tatooine stuff is great. I've got nothing.
Well, I mean, you know, Boba Fett is always a big character, and.
Yeah.
Even though he was a small character, he was a big character, and, you know, he had to...
I love what was done with his character.
Explain it, too, you know.
Okay.
And you had to explain it in a way that was, you know, to do a little bit, to pay a little bit of respect to how many people were, like, obsessed with the character.
Yeah. Right now, probably one of the most iconic shots of the entire movie, the binary sunset, and the first real use of the Force theme by John Williams.
The idea of the multiple sun, I'm wondering if it reminds me of a book series, Dragon Man Spells, that was multiple moons. I was wondering if they took that idea.
Like the little flute there?
Yeah. You're probably going to hear Brian and I mention John Williams about 50 times. Yeah, I'm trying to avoid it. He won an Oscar for this, by the way. And he got nominated for the other two.
Should have been nominated for episode one.
And episode three. And I don't know, he wrote like four fantastic scores in 2005. So... but
all the quiet moments are just scored just beautifully.
Yeah.
And then the stuff with Obi-Wan Kenobi coming up is just my favorite part of the score.
Yeah.
All the quiet moments with Alan Guinness as Obi-Wan Kenobi. And
yeah.
Excuse me. And, you know, I don't know, Dave, I think you haven't really taken the time to watch the original versions of these movies recently.
No, not recently.
And, like, I get into the original version of that New Hope. So much more effortlessly than I do with this. I mean, like,
oh, I do too.
I totally get into the 77 version. Like, I'm absolutely.
You know, I mean, the thing is, it's like I told my friend Ryan, it's like when we do the Star Wars trilogy, it's like the ones I want to watch the original version of 4, special edition of 5, and the original edition of 6.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like.
Yeah, you gotta have the Yup Yup song.
Yeah.
You gotta have.
To say nothing of the fact that it's like, I mean, what he did in episode 6 with including Hayden Christensen, and there was just like...
I didn't disagree with that change.
I mean...
My problem with the Sarlacc pit sequence, that's a special edition stuff that I can't really wrap my head around, really. I can't get it.
Yeah, but that's a...
Hey, you know, we should talk about that when we're doing...
That's what I was about to say, yeah. The people's what is it? What are those creatures? Banthas?
Yes, those are banthas.
They sort of look like big Wookiees, don't they?
But they're elephants. They're elephants. That's what they are.
But I'm saying the face sort of looks like Wookiees.
Yeah, I kind of think of Dark Crystal like, when I see that.
Oh yeah, which was
Dark Crystal 2 coming out
by,
soon. Who's going to be directed by Jamie Tartakovsky, who did the animated The Clone Wars, which is going to be awesome.
Might be alright.
Hopefully, I think it'll be, well, when you give it to Clone Wars, I'm guessing it's going to be okay.
Yeah, but is it live action? Is it?
It's going to be Muppets and computer assistants.
Okay.
What do you think, Dave?
I don't know.
Dave is ominously quiet. Well, Jimmy Tarkowski loves the original Dark Crystal. He loves Star Wars. Like,
we love the original Dark Crystal, too. I just don't want it. Where are they going with the story? Where are they going with the story?
I don't know. I don't know really.
Star Wars, his first Dark Crystal, produced by Gary Kurtz, who did the original.
George Lucas produced Labyrinth.
Yes.
Which was another Jim Henson directed. But George Lucas produced Labyrinth. Gary Kurtz produced Dark Crystal.
That sound effect we just heard is different. When they see Kenobi, it's slightly different. But,
I'll give it totally deserving of the nomination he got for this.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The things he did with his character.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Sir Alec Guinness, the late Sir Alec Guinness, passed away several years ago. Also,
kind of looked upon.
Also known as for The Bridge on the River Kwai, The Lady Killers. Basically, a lot of David Lean's films.
Wasn't happy with his association with his. With
no,
his
he did come to resent it. Yeah. I mean, he really did.
Yeah.
What yeah. He just, you know, it's like, I think it was just the fact that he, of all the other work that he'd done,
this is what he's known for more than anything.
This is what he's known for more than anything, and he just got sick of people, you know, referencing it, you know. Would much rather hear people reference, you know, working Bridge on the River.
Which he
won an Oscar for. I still haven't seen that movie.
I love this cute. Yeah. Anyway, I love this whole scene.
Yeah. I mean, anything with Alec Guinness in this movie is just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is. But the actors had nothing but good things to say about him, though, mm-hmm. in that documentary. You know, they really did.
A few things to say about Lucas. They weren't all together.
Yeah.
Happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think pretty much every actor who's done one of these movies has had something to say about Lucas.
Yeah.
You always hear about some actors. It always seems like, you know, they, at the beginning, they were excited to get the part. And then by the end of it, it was like, oh, this is not.
You watch Sam Jackson in some of his interviews, like, mm-hmm. you know, later on, like episode 2 and 3, he's like, he totally went after that part for episode 1 and was about ready to do anything for it. And then, like, episode 2 and 3, like, he's really not, he's so not enamored with the fact that he's in his movies anymore. Now, you know what? The one that's on the ground is a left hand, and it's his right arm that's off. Anyone ever notice that?
That's his left arm. Right?
No, but I'm saying, no, you go back, no, well, okay. The arm that's on the ground is not the arm that's off of his body. I'm going to go ahead and say that.
Yeah. Since I'm not going to rewind it and check.
But I just, this is a detail I picked up on. I was like, wait a second, that's not the arm that's on.
First mention of the Clone Wars.
I promise you that's not the... Well, you know.
You're being mocked. I mean...
G4 did a pretty funny parody of this scene.
Who?
G4. Like, it's back to the show, that TV show that's on G4. And they did a pretty funny parody. They did a bear parody of the scene between Obi-Wan and Luke and Jedi. It's all funny.
One of the funniest parodies of Star Wars I've ever seen without question is Kevin Spacey hosting Saturday Night Live on the 10th anniversary and just doing all the actors, you know, auditioning for roles and stuff like that.
Yeah, because didn't Christopher Walken...
Christopher Walken is Han Solo.
He actually went out,
He was actually up for the part, actually. Let's see, who was it? Jack Lemmon is Chewbacca, and Walter Matthau is Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
These
are all Kevin Spacey doing these.
Yeah, Kevin Spacey was doing all these imitations of actors, you know, auditioning for the movies, and it was just absolutely hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
Just hilarious.
And some of the best Star Wars rants, I think, ever were in the Kevin Smith movie.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite one, I think, being in Chasing Amy.
Oh.
The best one in Chasing Amy.
Yes.
I think.
I mean, although the classic one,
the second best one is in Clerks.
Yeah,
I think.
Although I don't know, it's like I sort of waffle back and forth between them. I mean, it's like the one in Clerks is just so classic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, oh my god.
The best one is in Chasing Amy.
The funniest one's in Chasing Amy.
Yeah,
but
I remember watching this sometime when I was in college and wishing that I could just shut down like GTA did. I'm sure I had a final at some point in time. The other thing I want to say is that there's a lot of talk about how to do the lightsaber effects. You know, there's always these...
What's an animation effect?
Well, how do you do it in software? You know, how as a guy who's got like Photoshop or After Effects,
yeah,
how do I do it? And so there was a lot of, you know, because there's a whole lot of fan movies associated with Star Wars.
Yeah.
And
people are doing like Star Wars fan movies on like their laptops.
Right, exactly. So there was always a lot of talk about the best, easiest, quickest way to do a lightsaber effect. And now they've got it basically down to a science.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on that as you say, I just want to know the effect of how to do it. We talked about it in the beginning, explanation of the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I found that interesting as a kid. You know, and you're always, when you start a fantasy, science fiction movie, you're always kind of wondering what sort of the system of magic is.
Yeah.
And you know, there's different cartoons have their own system of magic, different books have their own system of magic. Mm-hmm. So I thought the Force was a bit more of an abstract one, a bit more of a more intelligent one.
Yeah.
Than some of the other ones, I think.
Definitely one of the better interpretations of modern religion.
Normally with fantasy, you've always got some mission of a god provided somebody with these sort of powers, and you're always having to deal with parents having issues with that.
Although, I mean, wouldn't you say though that, I mean, in episode one, when he introduces the idea of the midichlorians, sort of goes against that in a way? Just,
I didn't have a problem with midichlorians.
I didn't necessarily either, but I mean, you know, I've read it. That, you know, that does sort of go against the whole idea of, you know, sort of undermines the idea of the Force as something.
No, I think it's spiritual. Peter Cushing.
Yeah. Great.
Peter Cushing
Hammer
and David Prowse, both Hammer film
alumni.
Yep.
Peter Cushing has played Van Helsing. In the old Hammer movie.
Who was he in the Mummy movie? What was his name?
I can't remember, but he was also in the Hounds of Baskerville.
Oh, they're like George Lucas got these actors, like, you know, and later on he uses Christopher Lee.
Who he actually actually approached about this too.
Oh really? For Grandma Hogg?
Yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's on IMDb, I believe. Yeah, it wasn't.
But still, we wouldn't have him as Count Dooku.
No.
Which is... This scene is a little scary.
This guy clearly is not that bright. I mean, if he knew anything, he wouldn't be doing this.
He's being choked from across the room. That's,
So that is yet another great line.
Yeah.
That's the secret of a great line.
And then he's just killing people left and right in the Empire.
Yeah. I was one of the funniest, like, sort of like subtle running gags in that movie.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, everything else was so gloomy. It's like you have this sort of dark comic thing where it's like he's basically demoting people, demoting and promoting people by killing people. Really funny.
One of the things you mentioned about the midichlorians, that just kind of reminded me. I always wondered if that had anything to do with maybe some sort of a Chinese type influence. You know, you have the whole, you know, in Qi and that whole sort of body energy type system. I always wondered if that played into it. But, you know, it's always the the fighting has always looked reminiscent of some sort of martial arts.
Yeah.
Like sword fight, stuff like that. So, you know, I wonder if that, you know, had made it kind of come full circle, even though it's more spiritual, sort of the explanation of the spiritual
right.
sort of metachlorian thing, and that's got some sort of chi-based energy system type thing. I've always kind of wondered about that.
Well, I mean, also, I mean...
Is there any kind of value system in the Circle of Time folks' case?
Real time?
Mm-hmm. Like, is there a value system? Is there, like, a religious...
Yeah. I mean,
context to it at all.
I think it's just that any major fantasy series like that, which I mean, Star Wars belongs.
But I mean, typically you see like Dragonlance, something like that, another big one where there's a really big. I mean, there's like actual gods we're talking.
Yeah.
And in Wheel of Time, that's all a lot more abstract. I mean, there's still sort of like a creator type thing.
Yeah.
But that's all a little bit more abstract. And the magic system is probably even better than what you see here.
I you know, I didn't want to stop you, but I did have to point out that, I mean, the scene of him finding Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru is really, really chilling.
I remember not quite understanding that as a kid. I mean, it was
it took
me being an adult to really kind of notice that there was like burned, charred bodies.
Yeah. I was the exact same way.
Did the studio want the skeletons there for, like, some reason? They made a day of the notes, and, like, the movie was originally going to be a G-rated movie.
I don't remember.
And, like, the studio said, we want this to be a PG, put, like, some dead bodies somewhere.
I don't know.
I specifically remember hearing that somewhere.
Might have been the commentary?
But the dead bodies there, like, even in the first version?
Yeah, they were. I'm saying, like, you know, when this movie was originally going to come out,
it's going to be a G-rating.
This always scared me, too.
This did. Too. I mean, the fact that you don't see what happens, and it's like next thing you see is.
How about child abuse?
He doesn't know.
Well,
he's just saying. He doesn't know any better.
He's like, just totally ruined my day.
That's me. I am fun sucker.
So here you get the idea. Ruth's killing is fine, you know, if it achieves the goal for the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Even at the small scale.
Yeah. I mean, going back to what you were saying as far as, you know, a lot of aid and influences and stuff like that in the movie, I mean, I think goes back to the influence Kurosawa had on the movie. I mean, not just Hidden Fortress. I mean, you can see elements of a lot of his, you know, samurai films in these movies. But Seven Samurai, Sanjuro Yojimbo, which those two spawned an entirely different trilogy. But before, you know...
We're coming into, like...
Yeah, probably the... I don't know. I mean, there are some parts of this...
I think we're all... Most of the sweeping was made.
The Mos Eisley sequence. And it's like... A lot of it is, like, just not that, you know, why are we doing this? A lot of it is, like,
why this is done. I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
Entirely.
I don't agree with all of it. I think some of it's a little gratuitous.
Like, a lot of the sort of humorous type things, I think, in particular, have been...
I didn't mind him, like, adding more buildings and stuff like that to kind of really...
No, I didn't either. I mean, you know, having the Dubacks move and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's fine. But,
that's another thing of sincerity.
Yeah.
I'm quoted ad nauseum.
I believe I did that when I got pulled over for the first time. That's not true. I never did that. Although I kind of wish I had. I wonder what would have happened.
You never know. You could have made him laugh. He was like, oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
He could have been like a Star Wars geek. He's like, oh. Or he could have...
You don't need to see my identification.
Or he could have just...
Step out of the car, please.
Beat me to a living pulp.
You don't have big time. I heard that. Buy the song. Discuss your features.